Hi, I'm Len Testa, host of the Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. This is the first of our two December shows. If you need a break from this month's holiday preparations, you know, all the chipmunk roasting and Jack Daniels nipping at your nose, check out our 1964 World's Fair audio recordings at disneydish.bandcamp.com. We've got three episodes available, more than 2.5 hours long, from our sold-out show this fall in Flushing Meadows, New York. Jim and I talk about Walt Disney's participation in the fair, how he personally designed many of the show and ride elements, and how those things that Walt touched can still be seen in the Disney parks, especially Epcot. Tickets to this live show are $80 each, and all of the audio is available for pay what you want at disneydish.bandcamp.com. So if you like what we're doing here, and you don't want Jim to live on only reindeer meat again this winter, check out those shows, disneydish.bandcamp.com. And hey, thanks. Welcome back to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It is early December, and of course the first thing that you think about in early December is golf. At least I do, because just opening up last month in Walt Disney World was the new Four Seasons Tranquilo Golf Club, which is supposed to be super, super fabulous. So Jim and I were talking about this, and we thought it would be fun to do a show on the history of golf in Walt Disney World. And in order to give us that history, is the man himself, the sixth Spice Girl, Mr. Jim Hill. How's it going, Jim?
Wow, that would be chunky spice, wouldn't it?
Isn't that a piece picante? Isn't that a...
Ooh, we're just going to step over that. Okay. I thought, particularly given Tranquilo, it used to be Osprey Ridge.
Right.
That this might be an interesting time to sort of look back on the whole history of golf at Walt Disney World, because, as far back as February 2nd, 1967, when, the folks at, Walt had just passed away some, 6 weeks earlier. Mm-hmm. And, so here they are, they're sitting down with the Florida legislature, everybody's crowding into the Park East Theater to see the presentation of what is the Disney company going to build here.
And they'd already bought all the land, right?
And Walt had, in effect, what's kind of interesting is that Walt makes the movie for, the Epcot movie on October 28th, 66. He dies December 15th. All right.
So it's like 6-7 weeks later.
Right. And then just 6-7 weeks late after that, here he is, this is the first time the film's going to be shown in public and everyone's going to see what the plan is. And up until this point, nobody quite knew what it was, but here's Disney, straightforwardly talking about how, there's going to be a theme park similar to Disneyland, but five times as large as the one in Anaheim. And adjoining the theme park will be championship golf courses, tennis courts, water sports, and a series of hotels and motels for the family vacationer.
So why golf? I mean, was Walt a golfer, or was it this something where he thought, well, it's Florida, we have to have golf?
Well, it was more about the fact that they were trying to convince people that Disney World was not going to be Disneyland. This was not going to be a theme park, a parking lot. Because, again, face it, you had to convince people to fly all the way down to Florida or drive down to Central Florida, to go to this place.
Yeah.
And to just have a park wasn't enough. So It had to be a destination. And, and getting that extra day in, just meant that there had to be other things to do. I mean, just cloning Small World or Haunted Mansion was going to close the deal. I mean, there were new, rides and shows, Country Bear, Hall of Presidents, but that wasn't going to make Dad stay an extra day. So,
right.
Golf
might.
And the other thing to remember is that on, the guy who actually helped pick up the reins after Walt passed, Card Walker, was this huge golf fan. In fact, if you go down Main Street USA and look up at Card's window, it actually reads Dr. Card Walker, licensed practitioner of psychiatry and justice of the peace. We never close except for golf. Card, right from the get-go, was just believed hugely strongly that, that this place needed golf. More to the point, you know, Card so strongly, you know, just was such an enthusiast and played golf all the time and, you know, thought of himself as, you know, sort of an amateur pro that he dressed the part. In fact, if you ever went to a Disney function and you had to find Card Walker, you were invariably told, look for the guy who's dressed like a golf pro.
He's got the plaid pants.
Yeah. So there you go.
Really? That was his uniform. That's
that was his uniform. So anyway, so now it's time to figure out where the Disney golf courses are going to go and what they're going to look like. Now, to be honest, if you look at the photos of Walt standing in front of the working field plan for Walt Disney World, you can actually see golf courses kind of roughed in next to where the sort of the motels that were all sea themed, the Cape Cod and the Fiji Islands and that sort of thing were supposed to go. But they hadn't really locked in their place yet. More to the point, they hadn't really locked in their design. And as soon as the world found out that Disney was going to make, you know, include golf courses as part of, you know, at this resort, mm-hmm. you know, all these people sort of rushed at the company and volunteered for the job. And the interesting thing is Walker actually sort of stepped around all these guys and reached out to an architect called Joe Lee, who was very highly regarded for some of the golf courses he designed in the United States, South America.
Oh yeah, but, I see the golf courses. Yeah, I'm looking at the thing. Yeah, you're right. They're sort of tangential to the other stuff. Okay,
there you go. But Lee had come to Card's attention because he had designed the site of the 1968 PGA National Championship.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, I want to meet the guy who did this. So Walker reached out to Lee and says, Joe, we've had people from all over the country come in who called us for this golf course design job. We haven't heard anything from you. And Joe, you know, actually played it pretty cool. He said, look, I always think it's the client's responsibility to go look at the golf courses. If they see something like, contact the owner and then find out what they think they thought of the architect. I said, I've never contacted anybody for a job. And In Walker's eye, that was like, okay, interesting response.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you come down here and come walk the property with us? So this is April of 69, and they are just literally starting construction of the Magic Kingdom.
You know, which is going to open in October of 71.
There you go. All right.
And go.
Okay. And so, you know, what they're doing is they bring Joe over to where they're going to build the Poly. Because, in fact, if you look at, you know, for example, a lot of the early models, in fact, the model that's used for that 1970 preview booklet, you can actually see the golf courses, the golf holes seem to be really, really close to the Polynesian.
Mm-hmm.
And that was deliberate. In fact, they were kind of thinking about that would be another perk of staying at the Poly, that, you know, the golf course was literally right outside your door. And, you know, so Joe goes down and is walking the area and it's just, and he looks across the way and here are like 35 acres of ground that's much higher, that's surrounded by swamp, which could immediately be turned into water hazards. And he goes, look, that's where the clubhouse should go.
Wow.
And, you know, it said, look, there just wasn't enough room around the Polynesian to get all the holes in and put in the big driving ranges and all the parking. Everything would have been too jammed up.
Yeah. I mean, a golf course is big, right? Let's face it.
That's it. Exactly. But at the same time, I mean, the Imagineers were kind of married to this idea. I mean, they were really hesitant because that they'd always thought, well, this has got to be a perk of staying at the Poly. And, you know, so, you know, it's like, look, you know, Joe's like, look, you got to spread this out. This is golf. More to the point, do you really want golf balls raining down on your customers?
Exactly.
But this is where it gets interesting. What he did as a sop to try to win them over to the idea is, it's like, well, all right, let's create some connective tissue. So the initial structure that was built there, the two-story tall clubhouse for the Disney, what would eventually be known as the Magnolia and the Palm,
mm-hmm.
Was designed to have a South Seas feel. It featured virtually the same architecture and landscaping style of the Poly.
Really?
Yeah. And so it was one of these things where it's like that was enough to get the Imagineers to sort of sign off on it. But again, he insisted that there had to be some distance. So basically the clubhouse wound up being a quarter of a mile away from the closest monorail stop, which turns out eventually to really bite them in the ass, but we'll get to that.
Really?
Okay. Anyway, so the original plan was that Jolie was going to design three 18-hole golf courses, going to be par 72s.
Mm-hmm.
These were all going to be the language they used. They were designed to challenge vacationing golfers, but at the same time demonstrate the way that man and nature could work in harmony through proper planning and use of a natural setting.
Okay.
So we're kind of drifting back to the whole Disney wilderness preserve thing. You know, even the golf course was going to be one with nature. So you had the Palm and the Magnolia, and then you were going to have down toward Black Lake, but what eventually became renamed Lake Buena Vista, was going to be the Lake Buena Vista Golf Course, which would open in 72. Here's a guy who's getting to design 54 holes at a golf course, three golf courses all at the same time.
Yeah, which is practically unheard of, right? I mean, you might get a commission for one, but to do three, right?
And at the same time, 36 of these holes have to be ready for vacationers for the first year.
And that's tough, right? Because you have to grow the grass, and we're not just talking about throwing some seed down from Home Depot. Right?
Well, that's it exactly. That's been kind of one of the running themes of the Disney golf courses about how they plant and go, oof, not that stuff. And, 5 years later, rip everything out and oof, not that stuff.
Yeah.
It's been kind of tough for them. But the interesting thing, Joe got in there early enough and had you got to understand that there were 9,000 guys on site constructing the hotels and the monorail and the Magic Kingdom and the roads. And, Joe was able to grab bodies here and there and actually got the golf courses in and ready to go basically ahead of the parks and the hotels.
Wow.
It's what's kind of funny. It's the late summer of 71. And it looks like everything else is not going to make it. It's doubtful that the Magic Kingdom's going to be ready for October 1st. Likewise, the Contemporary and the Poly. But here comes Card Walker doing a walkthrough, and he loves how the courses look. And so he flies back to Burbank, and he announces as he comes through the door, all right, what we're going to do? We're going to hold a PGA tournament in December.
Sure.
And everyone's like,
it's December of
71.
Wow.
All right? He turns to the gentleman's name is Sandy Quinn. Okay. He was the first head of marketing for Walt Disney World. And who knows nothing about golf,
right?
But he does know that Card has said, look, I want big names there. I want Arnold Palmer. I want Lee Trevino. I want Jack Nicklaus. And Quinn's now, wait a minute. Okay. Now I know Arnold Palmer is associated with Bay Hill, which is in Orlando. Let me go talk to him. So, literally drives over to Bay Hill and
knocks at the door. Mr. Palmer?
No, that's it exactly. But at the same time, you got to remember that everyone who lives in Orlando is fascinated by Walt Disney World. They haven't been able to get in yet.
Oh, right. It's a curiosity. Yeah. Okay.
So it's like, well, would you like to come over and take a look at the site and maybe take a look at the courses? And to be honest, so he brings them over, and Arnold's really not all that interested in the courses, but he keeps looking off in the distance. And it's like, well, what is he looking at? It's like they're loading the monorails onto the beam.
Oh, and Arnold Palmer's never seen that before, right?
All right.
Golf courses.
And it's like, whoa, what's that? And so, well, let's go take a look.
It's our monorail.
And so Sandy runs Arnold over to the monorail. And, of course, all the guys who were working on the monorail said, wow, it's Arnold Palmer. It's like, do you want to go for a ride? And so for the next 5 hours.
they take Arnold Palmer for a ride on the monorail.
On the monorail. And he's just running around the empty track. And he's having a ball. And they let him, he's just like a kid. And so And Sandy, it's some wonderful quotes from the piece that he did to the Sentinel about this. It's like, we said a little prayer hoping the damn thing wouldn't fall off or something while he was on it.
Gulford dies in monorail.
But, you know, so he gets off the monorail, and so we start talking a little bit about the golf tournament. He said, not a problem. Sign me up. I'll call a few friends. And
it's like, yeah, you know, we'll get Frank Sinatra in. Ah, you know, Frank.
And sure enough, I mean, he for the first tournament, he lines up Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, and all of these big names. And meanwhile, of course, Disney, because, you know, they're just trying to get it done. You know, Larry Campos, who was in charge of the tournament, describes how that first year they were spending 12 to 18 hours a day just getting everything ready on the golf course. And he remembers building the bleachers under floodlights the night before.
he's over there, like, you know, fastening in the seat. Wow. But all the grass, all the bunkers, all the water hazards, everything was ready to go?
Everything was ready to go, and
just the other infrastructure, like, you don't think about lighting and bleachers and, you know, walking paths probably and stuff like that for, you know, thousands of people.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that in just a sec, but need to back up a little bit here, because it's kind of an important moment happened in Disney history on October 1st. You know, Card Walker and
71.
Yeah, 71. Okay, so you've got, you know, Card Walker and Don Tatum, who's basically the VP of Disney at that point, are on site. And as soon as the park opens, you know, and as soon as they see that, you know, they're not quite getting the attendance they were hoping for. I mean, remember, it had been projected that maybe 200,000 people would try to cram in on opening day, and they only got 10,000.
You know, that's off by a little bit, yeah.
Off a little bit. You know, so Don and Card they golf away their woes. They go over to the golf course and, you know, their immediate priorities. Let's go play a round of golf. All right. Let's just put this behind us. Now jump ahead 3 weeks. It's the official opening of the park and, you know, they're now staying, Card Walker, Don Tatum and Roy O. Disney are staying in a condo that's being built down on site for the third golf course, for the Lake Buena Vista golf course.
Okay.
And it's at this point that Roy has finally been filled in on about how much Walt Disney World actually cost to build, which isn't the $300 million that Card had been telling him about. It was closer to four.
Wow.
And Roy's
this is when $400 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, and Roy's furious. I mean, absolutely furious. But Card is the interesting thing. Card was one of Walt's real, you know, he was at the Walt Disney Company. You either one of Walt's guys or one of Roy's boys. You were either a financial guy or you were creative. And Card, who started in the mailroom in 38, you know, in 30 years later is a VP of the company, actually comes at Roy pretty hard to the effect of, look, I told you about this, you know, and you don't want me to go to the board of directors and tell them about how Walt's brother is going senile, do you?
God forbid anything should happen.
Yeah. And so Roy actually goes back to Burbank and consults with the company's lawyers about how would he go about. And this is actually in Bob Thomas's Building a Company. The phrase that he uses, how do I go about clipping Card Walker's wings? You know, because this guy at this point had gone from being he was the head of marketing in 65. Mm-hmm. When Walt passed, he became head of operations. And by the time, you know, it's 68, 69 rolls around, this guy is now, you know, basically running the show. I mean, you know, yes, you know, that Roy is president of the Walt Disney Company. But, you know, Card CEO, and more to the point, because he's been on the board since 1960, he's got a lot of guys in his pocket.
Right.
So it's kind of a weird situation. And unfortunately, you know, before Roy can really do anything, he has a cerebral hemorrhage on December 20th, 1971, and dies. And so Card really kind of gets off the hook. You know, but again, to me, it always would have been interesting whether Card would have wound up golfing somewhere else in 72 if you know, if Roy had lived even just a few more months and had managed to get him out of the company.
Wow.
So, anyway, so we have our first, you know, going back to the tournament now.
Mm-hmm.
Tournament, and again, got to understand, there's kind of method to Card's madness because as a former marketing guy, he knew that, you know, basically the golf courses were going to get overshadowed by the theme parks and the hotels. But if they had a PGA tournament, and, you know, that would help raise their profile.
Oh, yeah, you get so it's probably televised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you probably get, you know, so typically that's what, a couple days of coverage?
Well, actually, it started November 29th and ran through December 5th, 1971.
Oh, wow.
There was 150, it was called the Walt Disney World Open $150,000 Golf Championship. And again, Nicholas took it the first year and actually won it the next 2 years. And it was, you know, the weird thing of if you were a fan of celebrities or golf, you know, pros of that era, it was a great event to go to because, you know.
Everyone's there.
Everyone's there. I mean, you got to see Joe DiMaggio, Johnny Bench, Jackie Robinson, and entertainers like Fred McMurray, Robert Stack, Charlie Pratt, and Lawrence Welk. Lawrence Welk!
Why not?
Yeah. So, anyway. Jump ahead to 73, and again, because Card seriously wants, you know, the golf to really take off at Disney, he decides that having a golf club isn't enough. So they build a golf resort. And a golf resort. Opens in 73, only has 151 rooms.
Where was this?
This was actually, you know, they just sort of took the clubhouse and just built out right behind it.
They just kept going.
Yeah. Now, the downside of they throw this thing open in 73, but of course, October of 73, the oil embargo starts.
Yeah. So yeah. This is across from where the Polynesian was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anytime you've driven by the Poly and headed toward the Grand Flow, you've seen the driveway to the left.
Yes. Yeah.
You just go up that driveway, and there they are.
Really?
Yeah. And now, where this gets interesting again, 73, we have the oil embargo, and Disney actually stops everything in its tracks at that point because attendance tanks for about 6 months, and they get really scared. So, for example, the Asian Hotel or the Thai, depending on, you know, the year, the name of this thing, that 500-room project gets shut down. It's left empty for another 15 years before finally becoming the site of the Grand Floridian. I've actually heard from a couple of folks that Space Mountain would have probably never have been built if they hadn't, before this project or this property-wide stop construction order came down, they had just poured the foundation 2 weeks earlier.
Oh, wow. So within if it was 2 weeks later, some other glitch, it never would have got done.
Yeah. And, you know, wow. Mind you, there was a contract with RCA, but that, you know, that would have, they easily gotten around that. But anyway, wow. Where this gets kind of interesting, though, is as early as 1975, the pros who took part in the Disney golf, the PGA show down there, the championship, began to complain that they weren't drawing big enough crowds, that, you know, they were playing to basically empty bleachers. And so you had.
And that was a problem for them.
These are guys who were used to playing to these huge galleries of hundreds, if not thousands of people. And,
right.
And a couple of dozen would show up. And it was like, well, what's the problem? And, you know, let's be honest. The problem is that across the way is the world's greatest theme park. And more to the point, people, you know, in spite of all the money that Disney's paid to build, you know, this clubhouse and now this, 125-room, you know, golf resort, which, by the way, had the biggest rooms on property, that they were 450 square feet.
Wow.
You know, but, you know, the argument was, well, you're bringing golf bags in. You got to have some place to put them.
Okay, fair enough.
But nobody was coming to watch the pros play golf, and to be honest, the golf resort just wasn't doing the business.
It's not what people think of when people think of Walt Disney World, right? It's more of a, it's more of a side thing, right?
And then more to the point, I mean, this is where it gets strange, that the golf resort, which is only, again, it's a quarter of a mile away from the, you know, from the monorail station at the Polynesian.
1,300 feet. So not, I mean, yeah, spitting distance, right?
Okay. Polynesian and the Contemporary at this time are basically completely booked, you know, 365 days a year.
Sure.
The best the golf resort did at its height of popularity, it was 60 to 70%.
Wow. And that's only 150 rooms.
Yeah.
And, so 100 rooms are basically occupied at any given time.
They couldn't get people in there. And it was like, and I remember talking with Larry Pontius, who took over, who was the second head of marketing for Walt Disney World. And they were trying to figure out what to do with it. And, you know, they, you know, just, should we add a third course? And they came up with a kind of intriguing idea for this third course. The notion was that, what if the Imagineers, you know, forget about getting the professional golf designers. What if the Imagineers went around the world and went to all of the great golf courses in the world and selected the best hole number one, hole number two?
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. So, you know, for example, hole number one would be from Ireland.
Ireland, yes. You say, yeah.
You know, and the next one would be South Africa. And it would be this amazing, in one place, you could have all these experiences. And in the end,
it's like the Epcot of golf.
There you go.
That's a great idea.
Well, but it's interesting.
No one's done that before? No one's done that?
No one's done that. And it's interesting.
Jim, we're going into business.
Okay, I'll get the sand. But what ends up happening is that Epcot opens in October 82, and they actually see a significant drop in the number of people who are playing golf at the Magnolia and the Palm.
Because now there's more stuff to do.
Well, there you go.
The second day is just going to be now at the theme park. Oh, so that's funny. So the theme park cannibalizes the golf stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, face it. You know, Dad's traveled all this way, and now there's, you know, there's not that free day to sneak off and play golf.
Right.
All right. 1984 arrives. Card Walker and Ron Miller, who is also an avid golf player, are pushed out the door along with Don Tatum. And here comes Michael Eisner, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and Frank Wells. And
are any of them golfers?
No. I mean, Wells plays tennis. In fact, you know, there's this great story about how Wells played tennis with Clint Eastwood, and that's how they basically got him to come to Florida. Eastwood lost to Wells, and Wells made him come to Florida to show off the studio. And they had built the AA figure for, you know, the man with no name in the Western scene of the Great Movie Ride.
Right.
They didn't have the rights. You know, it was
oopsie.
Like, so, you know, it was one of these things where they actually had to put a paper bag over the character's head. You know, for the early drive-thrus. And so Wells brings Eastwood. And Eastwood, why are you making me come to Florida? Why are you making me get on this ride? And, you know, 5 seconds before the door opens and they come into the Western room, and imagine he runs on stage, rips the paper bag off, and then Wells comes around the corner, points to the man with no name figure, goes, oh, that's cool. And said, you're okay with it? I'm okay with it. Here, I conveniently have a contract in my...
Well, I just happened. This fell off the truck before I was picking you up.
There you go. So, but that's only because Eastwood lost in tennis to Frank Wells. So. Well, anyway.
I'm never going to think of that scene any other way from now on in the Great Movie Ride.
That's right.
By the way, you said the Great Movie Ride, this is a tangent, Great Movie Ride's getting updated now. What's up with that with...
Oh, okay.
We got 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Not to let the air out of the balloon here.
This is Turner Classic Movies, right? It's a pre-show update. It's a post-show update.
It's also a rebranding of the banners outside. Robert Osborne, who's the host of a lot of the stuff.
He's going to live there now, right? That's his.
Well, he's actually going to be the new narrator of the attraction, if what I've heard is correct.
Oh, so they're not going to do cast members?
Well, or the, you know how
the voiceover beyond that. Okay.
There's narration in individual scenes, that sort of thing.
Okay.
To be polite here, this is a patch on a bad tire. Originally, The Great Movie Ride was supposed to get a great big redo. In fact, that's one of the reasons the Giant Hat is coming down, in addition to visually intruding into the Star Wars land area. But given the cost of what it's going to take to do all the Pixar stuff to the back of the park, plus the newly expanded, beefed up Star Wars stuff to the front of the park, The Great Movie Ride redo has been pushed back to, we're 5 years out. You know, it'll be 2019, 2020, with the idea that it debuts with a new ride system and significantly beefed up stuff. It'll be ready for the 50th anniversary in 2021.
Oh, so we got 7 years.
Yeah. So, but what you're seeing here is, the theming is going to be adjusted. It's going to have that long overdue post show redo. Likewise, the stuff in the queue. I mean, it's for movie purists like myself, it's a wonderful association. More to the point, it also means that, you know, there's going to be a lot more Disney-related content on Turner Classic Movies. There'll be a bigger presence in the Turner Fest that's held in Hollywood every year.
They've got that cruise.
Yeah, but it's not going to be, you know, don't expect big changes. I mean, there may be one or two scenes selected for redoing, but if people are looking for a, you know, floor to ceiling, top to bottom redo of this thing, that's not happening.
No, I didn't think so either. Okay, anyway, so that's good. So going back to Clint Eastwood in the 70s, golf.
Yep. Okay. Golf. Okay. So now we're in a situation where Disney's, you know, realizes that just having the name golf on the resort, if people are, no, I'm not, I don't play golf. Why would I want to stay there? So they, starting in February of 86, they actually rebrand the resort. It's now called the Disney Inn. I mean, it's like, look, you take golf entirely out of it. Now it's Disney. And, you know, and to nail home that it's Disney, they retheme every room in the hotel to a Snow White theme. you know, and
you want Snow White. You want theming. Here's your theming.
There you go. And with the hope that this would turn it around, they add another 150 rooms. So, you know,
a doubling down right there.
Yeah. Still doesn't work. And worse than this, when MGM opens in 89, the Magnolia takes another hit. You know, the palm. You know, again, fewer golfers are going.
Yeah, because now there's, for those people who had the extra day after Epcot, now there's one less day.
So, you know, the weird thing is, again, Disney, this is Eisner, and Eisner is one of these guys who, okay, well, let's just throw stuff against the wall and let's stick, you know, and one of the things that, you know, that they were looking at guest service, well, why don't you stay in there? Why don't you play golf? And it's like, well, you know, they're kind of old-fashioned courses. And so, okay, old-fashioned courses, we can do something about that. They reach out to Tom Fazio, and they reach out to Peter Dye. And now we have two new golf courses. We have the Osprey Ridge and we have Eagle Pines, both of which would open in 92. They then, when those courses open, they shut down the Magnolia and the Palm and significantly rework them. Like I mentioned earlier, change out the grass, change out some of the arrangements of the traps and all that, all with the hope of, you know, maybe this will turn it around. Right. But at the same time, you know, just eventually, Disney has to throw in the towel. It's just, you know, that in spite of the Snow White theming, in spite of changing the name, people still look at the Poly and still look at the Contemporary and now the Grand Floridian, which are right on the monorail. And it's like, why should I pay to stay at this place that I have to hike a quarter of a mile to get to the monorail? So
1300 feet. I know.
That's right.
I know.
Never mind how far they walk when they come to the Magic Kingdom to get to the capital.
Nobody cares.
All right. So February 94 rolls around. All right. The Department of Defense is looking to build a resort stateside. They have early 1990s. Again, they've got resorts all over the world for service members when they want to go on leave or take a break or you know, that sort of thing. They have places to go, but they don't have one in the continental United States. So they
really?
Do serve. Nope.
Okay.
So they do survey work with the troops, and they find out the place that they'd love to have one of these things built is Orlando. And Disney somehow gets wind of this. And
have I got an elephant? I mean, a resort for you.
That's it, exactly. So February 94, the Department of Defense leases the Disney Inn. And it's just, and it's interesting. It's a 100-year lease.
Oh, really? They didn't buy it. It's a 100-year lease.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. It was a 100-year lease to begin with, but it allowed them to change the name to Shades of Green, which references the colors of the different service uniforms.
Right.
So they now make it available to all active duty and military retirees.
And DOD employees, yeah.
It suddenly, this thing goes through the roof. Suddenly,
oh, yeah.
It's 100% capacity.
Yeah, all the time. It's super, it's actually the only Disney resort I've never stayed in.
Well, you know, and that's we need to find some service members to help us out with that, because I remember going there during the golf days and dining in the trophy room, and it was this amazing restaurant. I mean, a beautiful, beautiful hotel.
Yeah.
But again, just empty. You know, just anyway.
It's probably not empty now, especially at the rates. So the Shades of Green is interesting because it's got a tiered pricing structure. The lower your rank, the less you pay to stay.
Isn't that great? Isn't that
great? It's fantastic.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, it does so well that in 96, the government turns around to Disney and goes, oh, come on. You know, we love this. You know, forget about the lease. We want to buy it. And Disney's like, well, sure. You know, we will sell you the resort for $43 million, provided we can retain the rights to the land the resort sits on. And again, you know.
That's an interesting concept of the word sell.
we'll
give this to you, but we're going to keep the thing it's on.
I have to admit, some canny Disney lawyer came up with that.
So they bought the building, but not the land that it's on.
You know, and what's kind of interesting is this, if you know your Disney history, when Disney bought the land for a good chunk of Walt Disney World, the sale almost tanked because they found out that Tufts University in Massachusetts didn't own the land but owned the mineral rights to the land.
Right, yeah.
And it was just one of these things where, for Disney's way of thinking, it's like, you know, we're going to need all of it, you know. So,
On the one hand, I think it's creative of Disney to do the negotiations. On the other hand, if you're going to screw over any branch of the United States government, the military is probably the last one that you want to screw over, because they're still the ones with the tanks.
Yeah,
yes. So. Would you like your land back? Yes. Come get it.
I don't know what to tell you there.
I mean, the Department of the Treasury. What are they going to do, right? But I mean, the military.
Well, all right. Yeah, now looping back to the golf course just for a sec. What's interesting about '96 is this Disney suddenly back in the spotlight again, because. This is actually when 20-year-old Tiger Wood is named Rookie of the Year because he wins the Walt Disney World Tournament.
Really?
This was his fifth tournament in a row where he came into the top five. And
wow.
So that was enough for Tiger to come out, you know, and be recognized. So, meanwhile, Disney hasn't entirely given up on golf yet. I mean, you've got, you know, again, earlier that year in May, you've got the Fantasia Golf opening next to the Dolphin and the Swan.
That is a really difficult golf course. The hard one.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. I told you I give up playing that. I hit 100 strokes. I'm done. Screw this.
Wow.
I'm out of here. Yeah, I wasn't anywhere near. It is an extreme. It's like everything is like a miniature. Every mm-hmm. hole is like a miniature golf hole with, I mean, the greens undulate, there are water hazards, there's bunkers. It's a hard, hard course.
And that was deliberately done by the Imagineers. They thought they'd do one fun one and one difficult one for the golf fans. And it turns out Exactly what you're saying. There was just this complaint of it's too hard. I'm here to play miniature golf. I don't want to have a miniature stroke.
Yeah, no, you know? I'm dead serious when I say I gave up at 100. I was like, I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, meanwhile, you know, taking that lesson to heart when Disney Winter Summerland opened at Blizzard Beach in March of 99, mm-hmm. they made sure that, look, this has all got to be fun to play. We don't need kids throwing tantrums and throwing golf. You know, golf clubs around.
Yeah, sure. So, Winter Summerland is by far the easiest of the golf courses, the miniature golf courses in Walt Disney World. It's way easier than even the easiest side of Fantasia Miniature Gardens.
But, you know, but at this point, really, it's kind of ironic given that, if you know your Disney publicity, they used to talk about how if Epcot were a golf ball, how tall would a golfer need to be to hit it, and how far would it go?
Sure.
By 2005, with the passing of Card Walker, Disney's enthusiasm for golfing really begins to fade. I mean,
right.
You see Eagle Pines close in 2007, and then in 2011, Disney actually farms out the management of it's
yeah,
know,
this was golfers. Interesting. This was to
Arnold Palmer.
Arnold Palmer, yeah.
our monorail driver. yeah, he took over. It's a 20-year strategic alliance, and you know there are the Arnold Palmer Golf Management operates, manages, maintains, and promotes all now four of the Disney golf courses: the Palm and Magnolia, the Lake Buena Vista Club, and what used to be Osprey Ridge. Osprey Ridge closed in 2013 to, as we mentioned at the top of the show, to become Tranquillo. But the other thing that's worth noting about 2013 is this is when the PGA Tour just dropped its Disney tournament.
Yeah, they had it all the way up until 2012, right?
Right. At that time, the name had changed multiple times. It had been the Oldsmobile Tournament, and its last incarnation was the Children's Miracle Network Hospital Classic. You know, there's a name you can really make, our rapper. Yeah. Right?
It takes up two pages on TV Guide just for the title.
There you go. But yeah, that's. You know, it just turns out there a lot of the pros were just taking a pass on the show because there was more money to be had by appearing in tournaments overseas.
Right.
And so the interesting thing is that to bring things full circle here, the one remaining PGA show in the Orlando area now is the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, you know, where Sandy Quinn went all those years ago to bring Arnold over to.
Funny.
And now, there's always a question now that, you know, is this just a temporary phase? Is that, you know, could Disney, I mean, they've got so much land and they did build another golf course or two down over by Celebration. Does this mean Disney's completely out of the golf business or, to be honest, Disney is, it's hard not to follow the trends. I mean, for example, in 2013, more golf courses closed than opened for
really?
The eighth straight year.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. In 2013, 14 18-hole golf courses opened. In comparison, 157 courses closed.
Wow. And you know, part of that is they're being sold because the real estate that they're on is more valuable than the golf course.
And
they're being turned into housing developments.
And at the same time, it's kind of a generational thing. You know,
yeah,
it's
not many people our age golf anymore.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just it's just kind of strange when you think about it that Disney bet so big into golf, because of Card Walker and his love of the game, and you know now you've got Bob Iger who, to be honest, Bob's kind of a cipher.
Nobody knows what he has for hobbies. I mean, we don't really. Yeah.
That's whatever I've read interviews with him, he's always so proud of what he can make his iPhone do. So, you know,
that could be it.
Yeah, maybe that's it. We'll just build a giant iPhone that'll loom over the resort.
We sent one of our researchers over to Tranquillo last week or the week before,
mm-hmm.
For the tour and everything. And Four Seasons, give us the guided tour because you can't actually golf and tour at the same time. You have to do one or the other. okay. to sort of focus on it. But I mean, it looks amazing. There's a going back to your thing about the wildlife. There are actually deer that roam the fairways of the Tranquilo course.
Did he mention whether or not any of the osprey nest things were left in place?
I don't know, but the fact that I think that there are deer running around. I mean, and so the deer are actually fairly domesticated. They will come up to you, and if you, they'll give you like the you can carry like grains or cereal or whatever. The deer will come up and eat it out of your hand. I've got pictures of my researcher feeding a deer on like the ninth hole.
I'm sorry, this is the Walt Disney Company.
What, you expect this to be different?
Man is in the forest?
Exactly.
It's like, man is on the ninth hole. That means Cheerios. Woohoo! And it's like,
But it was, it was bizarre. And it looks beautiful. I mean, the greens are, really, really nice. The all the landscaping looks really, really good. The clubhouse looks exquisite. So hold on, let's send you the photos here, Jim, so you can see the photos.
Okay.
Not that anybody in the podcast is going to see it, but anyway.
No, just the irony is that and again, what's in a name? But when they were building Osprey Ridge, they actually, it opens in '92 with these six giant osprey nest platforms that are scattered around the course. And it wasn't until 2 years later that their first ospreys actually showed up. So it's, kind of a field of dreams. Build it and they will fly in.
That's fantastic. All right. So it'll be interesting to see whether Disney can get another PGA event. But in the meantime, what are greens fees for these things? Where do they run? They're fairly expensive, right?
Oh, wow. To be honest, folks, you want to go over to Disney Golf because it turns out that if you say golf, you start golfing at 6 in the morning, there's one price structure if you're going.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about this. Yeah, it's different based on how hot it is and the time of day.
That's it, exactly. So,
would you like stroke or no stroke?
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that. Yeah, you want to go either very early in the morning or very late at night, right?
There you go. There you go. And bring your golf glow-in-the-dark balls. So, and on that note,
All right. Well, this has been a very interesting golf episode. We'll be back again on the 15th of the month, right, Jim?
There we go.
Yep. Awesome. We'll have lots of fun stuff to talk about then. All right. You've been listening to the Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. Please go onto iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you would like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.
Take care, guys.